This episode is brought to you by our Intergenerational Conversation Toolkit, How to Talk to Any Young Person. This guide is the perfect handbook for any adult looking for a starting point in conversations with today's young people. It includes fundamental principles of conversation and 30 plus questions and topics to explore. Order in bulk to equip volunteers in your ministry and other adults in your church. Find this conversational toolkit at fulleryouthinstitute.org/store. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the FYI on Youth Ministry. In this podcast, the FYI team explores fresh ideas, diverse stories, and of course, groundbreaking research. This season, we're talking about your team, from your volunteers to your senior pastors to even the teenagers themselves. This episode is all about older adults and intergenerational ministry. Our hosts today are Giovanni Panginda and me, Roslyn Hernandez, and our guest is Matthew DePress.
We can learn from each other no matter where we are on the age spectrum.
Here's what young people had to say when we asked them about interacting with older generations.
They're always there at church. I feel like they're more consistent. You see that they're old and they still continue to put their life with God.
The older adults do help us. They help us with like paying for something and all that.
They give you money. Awesome. Yeah.
I think the older selection of people, they're very like nice people. Like they're not always super grouchy or anything and don't really lose their patience that much.
Okay, so how have you experienced older people at your church?
They're really friendly. Like Hermano Dimas, he always has something to say, or like he can make you laugh. There's Hermana Castillo. She was an old person even when I was young, and she's like always been nice to me, like hugging me and letting me play with her.
They've been around a long time and have a lot to teach. I think that they're great people to ask for advice, and if you treat them nicely, they will treat you great. So,
hey, we are back. I am Roslyn.
And I'm Gio. And wait a minute. I think this is the fourth time we're hosting together.
It is.
This is like a celebration. I feel like we need, I don't know, ice cream or something.
So, Gio, I have a question for you.
Yes.
If you could make up an ice cream flavor, What would it be? These magical, whimsical mixture flavors.
I think I would be like a mixture of cookies and cream with strawberries and, You know, a hint of honey and lavender, because I just love lavender.
Nice. I was thinking about this. I think this flavor is probably out there, but something like Mexican chocolate. That's the chocolate flavor, but with like canela, cinnamon, and a little bit of spice, a little bit of like paprika in there.
Wow.
That would be really good. I think that would, make me happy. Well, I think this talking about ice cream, all the different flavors, kind of brings us to something that we are so happy that we are doing through this podcast. And that is that we have so many of our colleagues who have been hosts for the podcast in all these different episodes.
We all have such flavor to bring at FYI, you know, a dash of this, a dash of that, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah, we know that there are so many different contexts in youth ministry and that so many of our colleagues have worked in different contexts and have different insights.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hope that the approach that we've taken with this season has been enriching and helpful for everyone.
Enriching. I love that word. You know, I feel like that's also an ice cream word.
Yes, it is. So today we're going to be listening to the interview that I did with Matthew DePress.
All right. I'm excited.
Yay.
Let's listen, shall we?
Yeah, let's go.
All right.
We are going to be talking with Matthew DePress. I worked with Matthew very closely when he was our church engagement specialist here at FYI. And apart from our work with the growing young cohort, we bonded over documentaries and music. And he is...
Yes.
Yeah. Many of our Monday mornings were about documentaries and music.
which I thought was great. He's
fantastic.
He is with us today because he has conducted research about and led intergenerational ministries. And Matthew has been in church ministry for 15 years. He is now the adult and teaching pastor at Generations Church in Greeley, Colorado. Matthew, welcome.
Yes, it's so good to be here. Thanks.
So intergenerational ministry, you have a very personal journey. Kind of, I see like a sort of an origin story of sorts. And so Can you share that story with us?
Absolutely. You know, when I was growing up, I didn't become a Christian until I was 18. And I was a pretty difficult child growing up. I was not the easiest kid. And when I was in middle school, I had a paper route. And on my paper route, in the middle of the paper route, was basically an assisted living facility. And so it was a lot of older adults who could still live on their own. And so I went through one day, I delivered all my papers, I got home, and there was a voicemail on my answering machine. It was this woman named Norma. And Norma said, "Hi, this is Norma. You forgot my newspaper." And let me tell you, I really don't think I forgot her newspaper. So I called her and I said, "Hi, Norma, this is Matthew." And she said, "You forgot my newspaper." And I was like, "Yeah, I really don't think I forgot your newspaper." And she's like, "But no, you did." And what it meant for me, it was kind of an inconvenience. I was in middle school, is I had to have my parents bring me to a gas station or a convenience store type thing and pick up a newspaper. It was like 75 cents, which when you have a paper out, it's like 10 weeks worth of work. And so I had to spend this money on a newspaper, and I had to go and I had to re-deliver the newspaper. And so my parents brought the newspaper to Norma's house. And as I was dropping it off, Norma came and greeted me at the door, and she said, "Hi, Matthew." And being the terrible kid that I was, I took the newspaper and I threw it on the ground and I walked off and I didn't say a word. I mean, it was a jerk move. Like, hindsight being 20/20, it was not a nice guy and not a nice thing to do. And she says to me, as kind as could be, she said, "Thank you, Matthew." And so the next morning it was 5 a.m. and I get up and I go to I'm walking through Four Seasons Village, and I get to Norma's door, and guess who's waiting for me at the door? Norma. I nicknamed her Micromanaging Norma. I was like, "This is ridiculous. Like, I forgot your newspaper once, but whatever." And so she says, "Hi, Matthew." And so I remember I took the newspaper, I stuffed it in her mailbox, and I walked off and didn't say a word. "Thanks, Matthew." Next day, 5 a.m., Norma's there. Next day, 5 a.m., Norma's there. 2 weeks in, she has recruited her husband, George. George and Norma are greeting me at the door. And I was like, "This is just absurd. Why is this happening?" And so over time, over the course of a few months, maybe even like a year, I actually came to know George and Norma. They were really, really kind people. And anyway, I eventually quit my paper route. Flash forward 4 years. I become a Christian at 18 years old. I had never stepped foot in my church before. I became a Christian at a summer camp. About a week after I became a Christian, I walk in the doors of this church called Holton Wesleyan Church. And who is in the lobby of the church? Norma. And so she gets to me across the lobby as fast as possible. And she says, "Matthew, I heard that you became a Christian at camp last week. Is this true?" And I said, "It is." And Norma just starts weeping. I mean, it's uncomfortable. And I'm like, "What is happening?" And she said, "Well, do you remember the day that you forgot my newspaper?" And I was like, "I didn't forget." No, I didn't say that. I did not say that to her. But I was like, "Yeah, I remember." And she said, "When you threw the newspaper down and you were not really friendly, I felt like God was speaking to me to say that you need to do whatever you can to love this young man." And she said, "And I felt like God spoke to me and said, you need to wake up every day at 5 a.m. and you need to pray that one day Matthew would come and trust to believe and come to trust and believe in God." And so she said, "The reason why we would greet you at 5 a.m. is it would be this reminder to pray for you." And she said, "Even after you quit your paper out, we have been waking up at 5 a.m., George and I, to pray for you that one day you would accept Jesus." And she said, "Matthew," and she's weeping, and she's like, "That day is here. Like, it happened." And I'm like bawling, and she's bawling, and we have this moment. And whenever I would go home to visit my family after I went to college and beyond, is I visit three people. I'd visit my mom and dad. I would visit my grandparents, and I would visit George and Norma. The reason why I was interested in visiting George and Norma was because they loved me at my most unlovable moment. Like, they're an older couple who they could have judged me. They could have shown, they could have cast judgment and dismissed me as some punk jerk kid, which I was. And they chose instead to love me at my most unlovable moment. And so that's really, I think, the origin story of how I've become passionate to love older adults.
This is I think the second, third time that I hear that story, and I'm still so impacted by it and just so moved by how they loved you and the way that they showed that. Yeah.
I'm so thankful for them.
Aw. So generally, we know it is important to surround adolescents with caring adults, and you kind of showed us that through your story that caring adults are so important for us. In your experience and from your research, how do you define intergenerational ministry?
Yeah, I define intergenerational ministry this way, that, and it's so simple, that an 8-year-old can teach an 18-year-old who can teach an 80-year-old about Jesus, and an 80-year-old can teach an 18-year-old who can teach an 8-year-old about Jesus. And basically the point is that we can learn from each other no matter where we are on the age spectrum, that younger people can teach older people and older people can teach younger people. And the reason why I think that definition is important is because if you look at all of the educational systems that we have, it is more often than not predicated on older people teaching younger people. But when you look at the way Jesus talks about learning, when you look at the way education works with Jesus, he is so moved by the way that young people think and the way that children act and the things that we can learn from children. It's this beautiful kind of going both ways kind of idea. So yeah, 8 to 18 to 80 and then 80 to 18 to 8. The other thing I would say is that I use the word intergenerational ministry on purpose. And it's because I think there's a slight difference and nuance between multi-generational ministry and intergenerational ministry. Multi-generational ministry, I think all churches are multi-generational. Multi-generational ministry is when you have different ages in the same room, different generations in the same room, but they're not necessarily interacting with each other. There's no intersecting going on. You don't know more about a different generation than when you previously walked in the room. Those are some of the ways that I would define intergenerational ministry and some of the little nuances with it.
Yeah, I think that is so important. In learning at Fuller about youth ministry, there's been work by Chap Clark where he says, yeah, you know, there's youth ministry and children's ministry, they've been siloed. And it is so important to have all the generations together. And as you say, like doing things together, interacting with each other, learning from each other, that is so important.
It's good. Chap Clark has been a huge influence on me and so many other people in youth world. It's good.
So what do you think, like, what do you see the benefits? What are the benefits for adolescents and for adults that are involved in this?
Yeah. So I think the main benefit is that we have so much to learn from each other. And again, this is really simple stuff, but we have a tremendous amount to learn from each other. And when we aren't intergenerational, we miss out, I think, on the richness of life with each other. That the problem for younger people when we're not intergenerational is that younger people miss out on the experience of life with older adults, the wisdom of life from older adults, the sagely kind of situations that older people can teach us, the way that older people can teach us when they suffer and go through crises and pain, and the way that young people can learn from that. And conversely, I would say that older people miss out on the richness of life when they're not with younger people, because younger people, I think, tend to teach us who are older about this, I don't know, almost like an innocent, whimsical faith that we tend to grow out of. That for me, my faith tends to go away because I'm educated and I want to be logical and I want to process and think through what I believe. And young people just have this faith that is so beautiful. I think the benefits are that we experience this richness in the way we teach and learn from each other.
We've been doing research on Generation Z, and Generation Z, they are so inspiring because they are doing so much. Sometimes as we get older, we kind of forget, or we tend to fall into a place of complacency or just thinking like, oh, that's the way things are. But this generation is looking for justice and is doing so much work that is inclusive and about diversity, and in a way that we forget to keep doing, or that we forget in different ways that we forget to see even in our faith sometimes.
Yeah. And I think what tends to happen too is that as we age, we tend to not want to risk. And we're afraid of the consequences of risk. And you have young people who are like, I'm not afraid of that. And it could be that younger people haven't gone through as much pain or as much suffering as an older adult. And so the older adults are like, no, we don't want to do that because we don't want to go through that again. Mm-hmm. But a younger person is like, I'm willing to risk this and give it all. And we tend to age out of that and not be willing to take the risks that I think a lot of younger people are willing to take.
Yeah, so we, I guess, kind of get a little comfortable and like whatever we have achieved or as much as we have gained. You already explained the difference between multi-generational and intergenerational ministry. And I think that's one of the myths that we might be holding about intergenerational ministry. But what are some of the myths that we might have apart from that?
Yep. Yeah, that's good. I would say that one of the major myths is that younger people don't want to hear from older people and vice versa. And I just simply think that is not true. I think maybe the reason why that myth has been created or that it's kind of lived on is that maybe there are some, there haven't been healthy civil dialogues that have been started or cultivated or fostered. And so instead we just think like, no, we're so far apart. We believe completely different things and we don't want to hear from each other. So I hear so many older adults who just say, I wish that I could be able to teach a young person, but young people don't want to listen or young people don't want to hear. And I'm like, actually, I think if you leaned in, you would find the opposite to be true. And again, vice versa. The other thing that I would say would be that for proponents of intergenerational ministry, there's probably a myth that separating by age all is wrong. That if you're going to be truly intergenerational, then you need to be 100% intergenerational and that you can't segment by age. And I would just say like, that's just not the case. It doesn't mean that if you have age-appropriate ministries, you don't value intergenerational ministry. The way we've kind of said this, the way I've kind of defined this is that I believe in age-appropriate ministries with intergenerational opportunities. And I know a lot of FYI's work has talked about this. There needs to be a place, Sticky Faith talks about this, needs to be a place for 16-year-old kids to talk about 16-year-old kid things.
Yeah, safe spaces where they get to just be themselves. But also places where they get to learn and interact with other older adults and younger kids or just everyone. Yeah, all the aunties and the uncles.
All the aunties and the uncles. They're the best.
I grew up in an American church and I remember growing up in Sunday school and having a girls ministry teachers that were older ladies and then going off to college and coming back for during the breaks and having one of the older brothers, hermano, one of the older hermanos who would always like talk to me whenever I was home. And I really, really appreciated that. And it wasn't like we had super deep conversations or it wasn't like we were talking always about theology, or it was just like him coming over and saying like, hey, how are you doing? What are you learning at school? Like, what's going on? And that's one of the things that I always looked forward to when I went home. I think not only did I crave for that, even while I was in college, like the warmth and the care that their small talk was about, you know, because it wasn't like you and Norma and George, but it was really meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. I, you know, since I've become a Christian and since I've been in pastoral ministry, I've been in predominantly white churches as a white male myself. And there is so much that white, predominantly white churches can learn from Latin American churches, predominantly African American churches about exactly what you're saying and your experience and how natural that warm communal experience is for churches. That I think a lot of the struggle comes from older adults first, because they literally, older adults would say more often than not, I literally don't know how to have conversations with a younger person. And so what I would encourage is that for us who are, I think sometimes sit in a middle space, is to really be an intentional intergenerational bridge builder. I was having a lunch with a group of older adults from our church The group is called Hearty Souls, which is a great name for older adults. And they also have another name. They have another group called Silver and Gold. And so it's fantastic. So I've been doing these lunches with people from Hearty Souls and Silver and Gold. And last week I was having a meeting with a gentleman who he's not significantly old. And I asked, I've been asking this question to the older adults as a 38-year-old. As I said, how can I best pastor you at this stage in your life? What's the best way that I could pastor you? And he said something that was really, I think, profound and really meaningful, considering the space that I feel called in and passionate about. As he said, I feel like you're able to be a bridge between us in Hearty Souls and to young people here at the church. And I felt so moved by that, because I think for us who are working with young people, we have a natural seat at the table that has the ability to bridge both worlds. The last thing I'll say here is that I think we have this sense that we need to come to an agreement in order for us to be good. And there are things that generationally we're just never going to come to an agreement on. But if we can do it in a civil, healthy way and have a healthy dialogue and healthy conversation, I think we'll find meaningful relationships still being built and living in the tension of being okay with not agreeing.
What are the most practical ways you can give us to get started in getting older and younger generations engaging one another?
I've seen relationships work really well intergenerationally in two ways. One is when we start relationships in an affinity-based way. So affinity-based, where you have the same interests or you have the same desires, or, you know, if there's a 17-year-old who wants to go to school for accounting, to connect them with a CPA in your church. If there's a 17
commonality.
Yeah. So if there's someone, you know, we live in Colorado, we're like 14,000 foot mountains or 40 miles away. And so if somebody's interested in hiking, connecting them with an older adult who's interested in hiking, or somebody who's interested in auto body mechanics or whatever it is. So affinity based mentoring or relationship connecting is I think working. And then there's a man who we're good friends with at FYI. His name is Virgil Gulker, and he works at Hope College, and he's been doing a bunch of research on how valuable he calls it problem solving based mentoring is. So we've been having conversations about how to do this at Generations on bringing younger people and older people to the table, presenting a problem at the church, and having older people and younger people at the church in their small group kind of hash that out. There's this beautiful thing that happens relationally when you can create or when you can solve problems together. So those are a couple of the ways that I think we could get started in intergenerational ministry.
Yeah, those sound great. And they sound very, very accessible. Yeah. Like, you know, whatever is accessible to you, it sounds like anyone can do those things.
I have a Microsoft Word doc on my computer that literally is like, these older adults have a background in these things, and these students at the church are interested in these things. How can I just connect the two together? So it's just literally as simple as like opening up a Google Doc or Microsoft Word and just typing stuff in.
Well, this has been awesome.
It's been so good to talk with you again. I've missed you, Rosalyn.
I missed you too. Thank you for being with us.
I miss you guys. So grateful for you and the way you've shaped me.
It's important to build each other up with other people, and I think that's what you can get from a community like church. Having a second family, or like a non-related family that's related to Christ. Everyone's putting in their effort.
We had like a car wash one time. We're all here, and then my mom, she was like in the kitchen making something, and then every one of the youths were just talking to her, laughing with her and all that. So yeah, like I said, some older adults just volunteer with us. They help us know when we won't need help for something.
And we're back. This is Gio.
And this is Rosalyn. Gio, as I was listening to the teens, something that came up for me was this feeling or the sense of family. We heard a couple of teens talk about how the church community is like a family to them. And I think that is so great that at such a young age, these young people are understanding a very basic theological truth that we are all adopted into the family of Christ. And they are understanding this in their church community. And that just, it makes me so happy that that is happening. And I don't know if I'm a little bit biased here because two of the young people for this interview are actually from the church that I grew up in.
Oh, wow.
And it is a small Latin American church. And as I was talking to Matthew, I kind of brought this up that the Latin American community or culture is actually already communal and a little bit more collective. So it kind of comes naturally, more naturally for us. It's a more organic thing to be intergenerational because there are grandparents, tías and tíos and moms and kids all interacting with each other because of the culture. So when we bring that culture into the church community, it's just an organic thing that happens. When I was a youth leader and when I was a girls ministry leader at that church, I always knew that I could ask the hermanas. These are the sisters or the church ladies of our community. I could always ask them for help. And I think one of the students mentioned that, you know, like my mom would help in the kitchen or they would say, you know, the hermanas help at church. I knew that I could reach out to them and they would be willing to help and to contribute and to invest in not just the life of the young people, but also in the life of the community.
Thanks for sharing, Rosanna. I think intergenerational relationships are so important to the lifelong faith journey of young people. I apologize if this brings up different memories, but I'd like to share with you my story because it's a story of encouragement because it has to do with a specific person in my life, an older person who has helped me heal. I tragically lost my sister. And the story of just grief and loss, just like it devastated me. And I remember Auntie Sylvia, who is, you know, a bit older than my mom. You know, she came to my side and, you know, she shared her story of loss. She had a son who passed away from a drunk driver hitting his car. And I remember just feeling shocked because I knew Auntie Sylvia and I knew her, you know, I thought pretty well. Like, she is so happy. She serves in so many things at church, and I'm looking at her, it's like looking at her for the first time, and I was just like, how is this woman, like, how does she have such joy in her heart despite such tragedy and loss? And I remember just connecting the dots and just seeing, like, wait a minute, if Auntie Sylvia can get through this, I know I can get through this as well. And I did, you know, I got through it, not just because of Auntie Sylvia. I got through, you know, my sister's death because of the different people at church that God surrounded me with. And as a young person, it helped me form my faith and to help me discover more about what I believe you know, God to be, and I believe God to be a healer and redeemer.
That's a powerful Gio. Thanks for sharing that with us. That just reminds me of how much we can all learn from sharing with each other. Actually, like, the deep, vulnerable things, right?
Yeah.
Probably Auntie Sylvia learned something from you as well, the way you received her encouragement or her words, or just other people that witnessed the encounter, or the way that you two related to one another could have learned something.
I think you're right. My mom would agree with you, and she would say that her being able to do that for me was her receiving healing as well, because, you know, I became kind of like that son for her. I think that's how God could use intergenerational relationships.
Matthew said something that really caught my attention about the younger generations having a sort of whimsical faith. And just as you and Sister Sylvia learn from each other through such a vulnerable way, there's also other times when we are able to learn from each other in more like fun, whimsical ways.
Yeah.
But also kind of really deep and full of love. At our church, we usually have like Mother's Day celebrations and Father's Day celebrations. And oftentimes younger kids, they'll be asked to write a poem for their moms or their dads.
Yeah.
So we always end up tearing up because it's so beautiful. But what I really love about these services is that after these young people express their love, oftentimes there is an older sister or brother that shares something and they'll add like, you know, it was so beautiful to see such a young person express themselves with such love, and like what they have learned from hearing that young person speak to the congregation from their heart.
Yeah, for me, that was Grandpa Paul. He's like the cheerleader for the youth.
Yay!
He would just be so encouraging. We kind of rubbed off on him. The kids decided to do like a spoken word. And right after that, Grandpa Paul comes up on stage. And like Grandpa Paul starts basically performing a spoken word. And we are entire like now, okay, we know to his credit, we know that he can speak in poetry form. He's a poet. Yeah, he's a poet. So we know that. But spoken word is different. Like there's this cadence. There's this rhythm. There's this like flavor. Right? That is different than just your standard poetry or poem structure. And Grandpa Paul did it. And we were just like, whoa, what? You know, and so to see him like do the things that we do, they respected him even more so.
That's awesome.
Yeah, hopefully he can like rap next time. I don't know.
I was gonna say, I can't wait to hear what else he comes up with.
Yeah, well, with Grandpa Paul, you never know. You never know. Like, he surprises us. So
we can also say to anyone listening, don't worry if, like, these things are not happening this way in your church. Don't feel like this is another thing, yet another thing that I have to do for the youth or for the youth ministry or another group of people that I have to interact with. I would say look around your church. Look around at what's already happening. Get to know more about the things that are going on so that you can know how to plug in young people with older generations. And Matthew said a couple of things that I think were really helpful. He talked about affinity pairings or affinity groups and, you know, knowing about what young people are interested in, knowing about what older generations are doing, and just being able to connect the two whenever it is possible.
Yeah.
Do you have any examples of things that can happen, Gio?
What I've seen done pretty well, we call them laundry grandparents. It's kind of like families who signed up to open up their homes for, you know, college students who, you know, home is pretty far for them. And these students can set up times with, you know, these grandparents to go over for dinner and laundry.
Awesome.
And I've seen people where like the student would do the laundry and grandma and grandpa's cooking you know on the side, and they're like they're talking from afar, and then they get down to the dinner table and the conversation picks up from there. You know, anytime there's like food, like sign me up.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that my church did was like a fix-it day. There's a lot of young people that don't know how to do certain skills, such as, you know, changing your tire if you have a flat tire. It was really cool for different older people to kind of spend the day and showing them how to do just that. And the flip side is the young people showing the older people how to do technological stuff.
Yes.
My huge shock was receiving a emoji. Now they know how to do how to send emojis and GIFs. Is it GIFs? GIFs. GIFs. I don't know how to pronounce it, but you know, it takes the relationship to a new level when you can do that.
Yeah, things like that, practical things or things that seem kind of mundane but are really, I think both generations would really, really appreciate.
Yeah, just, you know, remember, it's not about being trendy or keeping up with the latest fad, right? But we want to see the youngest generation grow in their faith. And one way is for young people to see that faith modeled for them in whatever way possible. And also that young people belong in, you know, the quote-unquote big church, right? Mm-hmm. Or quote-unquote adult church. We want young people to know that they belong, and intergenerational relationships is one way that helps.
So we hope you found these conversations helpful today.
Yeah, and if you like the podcast, please leave a review on iTunes, because it helps other leaders find us, and you can let us know what you're finding helpful, and that'll help us plan future episodes.
Yep, and remember, we have created a free PDF download. It has some ideas from today's episode, and you can find it on the show notes page for the episode at fulleryouthinstitute.org/podcast. Hi, friends. This is Rosalyn. Join us next time for a conversation with Scott Cormode about leading up.
If they just turn to their leaders and say, "Hello, Mr. Boss or Miss Boss, I'd like to tell you how wrong you are," that's not going to go well. So what do you do? Well, the first thing you have to do is leadership begins with listening. Listen to your boss. Because oftentimes what happens is senior leaders carry with them an enormous number of competing commitments.
Thanks to Giovanni Panginda for hosting today's episode with me.
Bye.
Bye. Teens Natalie, Tanya, Edgar, and William for their thoughts about interacting with older adults. Matthew DePress for being our guest.
Bye.
And thank you for listening. And now, here's a peek behind the scenes.
Yeah. And how old do you think they are?
I don't know, because they have been old since I was a baby, so pretty old. Yeah.